Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 197. In the news this week, I just wanted to mention that the Masonic Radio Theater, we have a Western coming out. Cast assignments went out as well as the scripts. So I'm just waiting for those to come back. The Masonic Roundtable had an episode, and we called it Back to the Future. And we talked about all of our favorite eras in Masonry. It was quite an interesting show, and I think we came away from that with a really positive message at the end. So if you missed out, please go back on YouTube and check it out. Viewers on YouTube get a little special of a treat. Since we did Back to the Future, we all filmed in black and white. It was kind of funny. In any case, I also wanted to mention that Brother Stephen L. Harrison is back this week and has a great segment. And just a reminder that these segments, the Masonic Minute, are on YouTube as well. And you can check them out, subscribe to the WCY channel, and you'll get an email from YouTube every time a new one comes out. And those drop every other week. And they are, of course, a segment as audio in our show. There is quite a bit of buzz about a Masonic television series that's going to be launched, and they are on Indiegogo, and they have a campaign to raise $150,000 for the pilot and another $150,000 later on, so a total of $300,000 to kind of get things rolling. And their goal is to basically make a full-blown Masonic TV show, 33 episodes, 50 minutes each, and there's a lot of people who have some issue with this, but rest assured, we got the scoop, right? So I have Michael Toth, the producer of the program, and he's actually a member of my valley. So I was very fortunate to be able to talk with him right at the Valley of Chicago. We sat in the library and we had a nice interview, and that will be in the show in the upcoming weeks. He explains that although, you know, we're trying to raise $150,000 times two, that doesn't come close to what it costs to produce a television series. You know, these things routinely cost for an episode $7 million to $8 million or more. And so really the money that they're trying to raise is to finish up the ideas and the proposals and all these sort of things so that they can sell the idea to a network. But they want to keep it independent. They want to make it so that Masons are still in control of this show. And it has all the potential in the world. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy the interview in a couple weeks when I get done with the audio. That aside, next week we're going to have a great conversation with Frater O on the phrase, Know Thyself. It's not to be missed. I think you guys will really enjoy it. The episode where we first premiered a conversation with Brother O was called The Talk, and it was just a few episodes back, and it got rave reviews. You know, that is something that we've been working on to try to come up with a regular schedule so that Brother O, or Frater O, if you want to call him either, can come on the show every other week, and we want to talk esoterics and some of the deeper meanings in Masonry. You know, we talked the other day on the phone, actually, and we said, you know, when we talk this next series, when we talk about Know Thyself, let's not hold back. Let's just go off the deep end. And so I think we're just going to talk and have a nice organic conversation, and I think you guys will all enjoy it. And of course, we invite you to be part of that conversation by getting in touch with Frater O and myself and corresponding through emails anytime you'd like. So which brings me to just mention really quickly that we do have our lapel pins, tie bars and cufflinks, and even money clips, which are available. Now, the money clips, the cufflinks, and the tie bars are in very limited quantities. So if you want one, make sure you put in an order for it so that we can get it out to you before we run out. It will not let you order if it is out, so don't fear that you've ordered and I'm already out. So we keep the inventory straight on PayPal, and we use those services to have a good customer service experience. Additionally, we do have the button style campaign pins, and those are only $5, and you can pick one of those up, and we send out orders once a week. I used to send them out on Monday, but now they're going out on Saturdays because I am, of course, in a new position at a new company, and my schedule is a little bit different. So just have a little bit of patience. If it's been a minute, I will get it to you. I do have Tales from the Craft by illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison on the WCY store as well. They're $18, and they ship anywhere in the United States, $25 for international shipping anywhere else in the world, and the $18 for U.S. shipping is a match of Amazon.com. The only difference is you're getting it from a brother with some pretty sweet packaging. And there's a new book out by Stephen L. Harrison, and it looks just amazing. It's called Freemasons at Oak Island, and it's a shorter book, and it's supposed to come out very soon. It's going to be pre-order. You can pre-order right now. You can find links to that in the show notes. And when I picked the topic for this week's episode, I did not know that there was another fire. I picked a paper called Fire, and it is about some of these things, and the paper was written quite a while back. However, the second I decided to read this, I got an instant message from Worshipful Brother John Ruark of the Masonic Roundtable and a good friend and brother, and he said it happened again, and there was another lodge fire that Chris Hodapp had reported on his website, Freemasons for Dummies, and it's just a horrible thing that's happening. But in any case, here's the paper for this week. Fire. This bulletin was written by Right Worshipful Brother Elmer F. Stein, Senior Grand Warden of the Grand Lodge FAAM of the District of Columbia, a retired Deputy Chief of the District Columbia Fire Department. Right Worshipful Brother Stein brings 39 years of firefighting experience on a subject too many of us tend to ignore. We thank Brother Stein for accepting the challenge to write this short talk bulletin. Fire. Man's best friend. Man's worst enemy. When controlled, fire warms man, cooks his food, and, if out camping, protects him from the carnivorous animals. However, when out of control, fires have burned millions of dollars worth of homes, buildings, and woodlands. What causes these disasters? A carelessly discarded lighted match, cigarette, or cigar in a wooded area, hot smoking materials, including pipes laid upon chairs, sofas, or beds in buildings, faulty electrical wiring, spontaneous combustion of containers, and, of course, arson. What, you may ask, do these things have to do with Freemasonry? Just this, brethren. If you have ever sustained the loss of a lodge hall, meeting room, building, or valuable property through fire, then you should be interested. In Washington, D.C. in 1963, Potomac Lodge No. 5 lost the entire contents of their building and almost lost the building itself by a fire. Likewise, in Aberdeen, Maryland, and in Murphy, North Carolina, lodge buildings fell victim to fires that destroyed the entire property and their valuable contents. More recently, the Grand Lodge of Ohio reported two lodges, Charity No. 530 in Palmyra, lost its building and contents, while Boggs Lodge No. 292 suffered a damaged floor, rug, and some furnishings from a fire that originated under the altar. In the case of Charity Lodge No. 530, the cause was thought to have been defective heating controls, but for the most part, causes of lodge fires remain unknown. We could go on and on, citing cases in almost every grand jurisdiction and listing hundreds of such instances if space allowed. These are but a few scattered instances of lodges destroyed by fire. The losses in these few cases ran between $75,000 to well over $200,000. Some, such as in Ohio, were adequately covered by insurances. Others were not. There is also the danger of a general conflagration, which may destroy hundreds of buildings, including lodge halls such as in Chicago in 1871 and the more recent Baltimore fire of 1904. However, in this article, we are more concerned with the individual lodge and its own building. In a general conflagration, or fire, there is little one can do but hope and pray the fire does not reach the lodge building. But there are many things we can all do in the case of the individual building to prevent fires from starting, protecting ourselves if such occurs, and seeing that we are adequately protected financially from severe loss. Our first question is, how safe is your lodge hall? Is it safe enough so that you will not have a fire in the kitchen, in the lodge room by faulty wiring of the lesser lights, or in the anteroom by a cigar or cigarette carelessly left on a chair, table, or sofa? Is the electrical system modern or ancient? Are your circuits overloaded by extra lighting during degree work or strained by the use of numerous appliances during a lodge dinner? When an electrical circuit blows, does some well-meaning member put a penny behind the fuse in the box so that you can continue your work or cooking? Does a well-meaning member dump a glass or pitcher of water in the small hole that is being burned into the fabric of a chair, couch, or sofa? These things are done, brethren, resulting in overheating wires that later in the night set fire to combustible material in the walls or ceilings through which they run. That chair, couch, or sofa may burst into flames long after everyone has left the lodge because such a fire, like a cancer, eats its way down into the soft material, and though apparently put out at the time by the water poured upon it, it may eventually eat its way into the open and find the necessary air to ignite it. The water has merely blocked the opening with a hard crust, and such items as this should be promptly removed to the outside, where it will not endanger or be a threat to any of the other property. It should be left there for at least 24 hours. There is a fallacy that has been perpetuated for years that buildings of modern materials such as brick, stone, or a combination of both are fireproof. Nothing is farther from the truth. No building is fireproof. Fire resistant, yes, but never fireproof. Even fire-resistant buildings are subject to disastrous fires. It is the contents that burn, not the building. Although, of course, under proper conditions, such as a general conflagration, even brick and concrete will crumble. Every lodge hall in the world has its share of furniture, paintings, rugs, plastics, even oil-based paints on the walls that are subject to combustion once a fire has gained a headway. Now let us look at what may be done in your lodge to ward off such a catastrophe. Needed, first and foremost, is a sprinkler system, something that is on guard day and night, every day and night of the year. Of course, even a sprinkler system is subject to human error by some turning off the valves for inspection and forgetting to turn them on again. However, this practice is rare, and whenever sprinklers have been installed in buildings and kept operational, none have ever sustained more than a minimal loss, and then at the point of the fire only. There may be some water damage, but compared to the probable loss of the entire structure, such a loss is infinitesimal, and this could and should be covered by a sufficient amount of insurance for such eventuality. These two items, sprinklers and insurance, are of the utmost importance to a lodge or grand lodge, yet whenever brought up in a meeting, the hue and cry of how much these items cost is deafening, and for the most part, are laid aside with the feeling it can't happen to us. Such frugality can be and is more costly than we realize. For the small amount involved to install sprinklers, the return is tremendous. First, there will be a definite reduction in the amount of insurance needed cost-wise, and the feeling that your lodge hall is safe and secure from being destroyed by fire. These two items are well worth the original cost of the sprinklers. The amount paid out for insurance to protect your lodge hall from water damage in case a sprinkler head should go off and extinguish a fire in its incipient stage is also minimal. An outside alarm system installed as part of the sprinkler system alerts the passerby that something is wrong in the building, and a prompt response by the fire department assures the difference between slight water damage and a probable complete loss of the entire building by fire. Only too often have we sat in lodges, and even grand lodges, and listened to arguments as to the proper amounts of insurance that should be carried. Never have we heard discussions regarding the protection of a lodge building before the fire strikes. The argument is always the same: the high cost of the insurance and the settling for the minimum amount and the lesser cost. Yet, a little foresight would have prevented the loss of a lodge building mentioned in the beginning of this talk. Just a few dollars invested in protection over the years would have more than taken care of their loss. The argument against buying insurance is sadly that the insurance never takes care of the entire loss. This is true, but compared to a complete loss, which only repays around 80%, a sufficient amount of insurance that repays whenever the water damages from a sprinkler certainly knocks that argument in the head. Or it should. Have you ever given serious thought to what might happen to your lodge if your lodge hall with all of your equipment were destroyed? Most lodges do not. Would your members stay with the lodge and meet somewhere else, probably in a less suitable quarter? Most would, many would not. They would affiliate with other lodges, and the resultant loss in membership would seriously cut into any program you offered to raise money to rebuild. Today, money is tight, and there are many Masons just not in a position to come up with the sufficient donations, contributions, or assessments to enable you to rebuild your lodge building. And these, brethren, as mentioned above, if pushed too hard for the funds, would demit or be dropped for non-payment of dues, even though they would probably want to remain members of the lodge because the cost of doing so would be prohibitive. Now let us turn to the preventative side of the coin. One item for the prevention of a fire is adequate incombustible trash containers equipped with tight lids. It is strange, but smokers have a bad habit of tapping live ashes from a cigarette or a cigar, and sometimes even throwing the lighted cigarette or cigar into a waste basket or trash container. In the case of waste baskets, smoke arising from it will usually alert someone into the fact that there is a fire brewing. In the cases of the trash containers, a tight cover would, in most cases, prevent the fire from starting due to the lack of oxygen. A fire needs air, and a tight lid assures protection if the lid is properly placed on the container. In lodges where smoking is permitted, adequate ash stands with a flip top permitting the butt to fall into the bottom should be provided. Do you have a competent janitor, or does some good brother volunteer his services in keeping your lodge trash area and kitchen cleaned up? There is a distinct danger in allowing grease to accumulate under the hood over kitchen stoves and in and around the stoves themselves. When sufficient grease accumulates, the sufficient heat is applied, such as long preparations for lodge dinners. Then you have the ingredients for a hot, nasty, and dangerous fire, such as the one in the kitchen of Cornerstone Lodge, number 224 in Tacoma Park, Maryland. Luckily, at the head of the table was seated an off-duty member of the D.C. Fire Department who, when notified that the kitchen was on fire, told the brother to notify the local fire department and then calmly proceeded to the kitchen, shut the door, and fought the flames under the stove hood and going up the wall through the exhaust fan with wet towels. Luckily, also, was the fact that he practically had the fire extinguished when the fire department, much to the amazement of the dinner guests, began to bring their equipment through the dining room to the kitchen. This was an incident where luck prevailed, having a fireman present who understood what to do and who took charge of the situation. What might have happened if he hadn't been there? The excited brother coming from the kitchen and crying, "Fire!" Several hundred brothers trying to get out of the room through two exits, both of which led up a flight of stairs to the outside at the same time. The danger of panic that normally kills or injures more people in such circumstances than the actual fire? This fire, like many others, would never have occurred had strict attention been given to the periodical cleaning of the stove hood and exhaust fan. A further protection would have been an adequate hood sprinkler designed for that purpose, or a carbon dioxide or foam extinguisher installed in the wall bracket in the kitchen. It may be well to mention here that extinguishers can be somewhat dangerous unless a person using them has been taught to use them properly. This can be done with little effort on your part by carefully reading and thoroughly understanding the instructions on its use. Not when the fire occurs, but when the extinguishers are installed and again at frequent periods. In many cases, lodges have brethren who are also members of the local fire department and who would be only too happy to assist your lodge in any way possible by instructing the brethren or the janitor in the use of extinguishers or by inspecting your quarters for defective electrical systems that could cause you trouble. Then heed his advice. It may be the most valuable single item in your plan against a fire occurring in your building. Every building of three or more stories housing a lodge should certainly be equipped with fire escapes, one of which should be readily available to the lodge room itself. An inside fireproof stairwell is the preferable type, but one or more on the outside certainly. These also should be examined regularly for rust, painted, and kept free of ice and snow during the winter. The pulley through which the cable runs for the weights, if it is the drop ladder's type, should be examined regularly to make sure the cable runs free to drop the ladder in case of an emergency. When the building or lodge room is occupied, there are several precautions that should be taken, such as making sure the building is properly marked with a small sign, but big enough to draw instant attention, indicating where the exits are located and exit lights are burning brightly. If you have an elevator, signs stating that elevator is not to be used in case of fire should be prominently displayed. There should also be signs plainly stating the emergency phone number of the local fire department, the location of the nearest alarm box and the nearest fire station. The janitor and, when occupied, the tiler of the lodge or lodges should also be thoroughly instructed in the proper method of calling by phone or otherwise alerting the fire department if an emergency occurs. Auxiliary lighting systems not dependent upon city circuits for electricity should be a must in every lodge room, hall, and stairway of every building in cases of power failure. Emergency auxiliary lights, which provide illumination over a 5,000 square foot area, are available at a modest cost. The use can prevent serious injury in case of an emergency. Should your building have an alarm system not connected with the city fire department, this should be plainly shown by a large card stating this fact, that it is for alerting the occupants of the building only and does not call the fire department. This oversight many times has caused fires of incipient origin to become full-scale conflagrations just because someone failed to notify the fire department, thinking the pulling of the local building alarm had taken care of this factor. We often see on television these days commercials advertising to us to hold family meetings to discuss a second escape plan, whereby we may leave our home in safety if the regular exits are blocked. Why not this same discussion in your lodge officer meetings, or every so often in lodge? You may never need it, yet someday it may save you and your fellow Mason's life. Masters today are constantly looking around for programs to fill their meetings whenever degree work is not on the agenda. You want a program? Here is a suggestion. The second week in October of every year is known as the Fire Prevention Week. Why not have a fire prevention program with the chief or some prominent and knowledgeable member of the local fire department, whether he be a brother or not, as the principal speaker? In closing, my brethren, you are strongly urged to take a new look at your building. Check over your insurance to be sure you have adequate insurance coverage against any type of disaster, especially fire. And if any of the items as listed in this article are needed, take prompt action to protect yourselves. The old cliche of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure applies even more today, with its inflated prices than what it was when it was first coined many years ago. All right, some food for thought. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I hope it gave you some tips, and I hope you guys go to Lodge next week, and I hope you talk about or at least look around the building and see what you guys can do to help out, because this is an epidemic all over the United States, whether it's arson or accident. This is just happening too often, guys. We have to take care of our lodges. So now comes the time of the show when I ask you to support the show. What has supporting the show done in the past? Well, it keeps all of the episodes from episode number one available for you at any time in perpetuity. You can go back and listen to them. In addition, it's made the application that we have completely free. So if you're interested in the application, which gives you access to the papers that we read on the show, as well as a mobile device wallpaper, sometimes video clips, if you're interested in that, go on your app store and download the podcast source, Search Whence Came You. I believe we're the number one result in education category. Check that out and go ahead and download it. And it's free because of all the brothers who have donated in the past, all the producers of this show. How can you be a producer of the show? Well, of course, you can do direct PayPal donations, or you can do some shopping on onnit.com, buy some Alpha Brain, become a higher thinking human being with some awesome vitamins and things like that. You can use the promo code WCY. And you'll get 10% off your order, as well as Onnit will send us a little bit back to this show to help keep those lights on. And two other guys do that for us also. FreemasonryArt.com. That's Brother Juan Sepulveda. He's got some amazing, amazing things. I know I say it all the time. Every week I remind you about Brother Juan Sepulveda and some of these other guys. But the truth be told, their products are unparalleled. They are true works of art. And every time you buy one, you get an original. So I urge you to go check out FreemasonryArt.com. Use the coupon code WCY at checkout. And again, 10% off for you. 10% comes back to this show, and it's a win-win. Another thing you can check out is FreemasonTees.com. Some of the more original designed t-shirts that you can find. And they're Masonic designs, really kind of cool stuff, reasonably priced. Check them out. Use the coupon code WCY. Again, 10% off and 10% back to this show. So you're helping either way. Now, if you'd like to get a lapel pin or a button pin or anything else like that, you can please check those out on WCYpodcast.com. Click on limited edition shop, and then you can go ahead and support the show that way with your donation through buying a little lapel pin or any of the other products that we offer. And now we're going to go into this week's segment with illustrious brother, Stephen L. Harrison.
To many of us, part of the enduring appeal of Masonry is its deep connection with tradition and history. The same is true for what many consider to be the greatest continuing sporting event in the world, known as the greatest spectacle in racing, the Indianapolis 500. Drivers and fans agree, just being at this immense sporting venue is enough to conjure up visions of the greatest moments in racing. Every corner of the place is steeped in memories of the greatest names in racing history. De Palma, Shaw, Foyt, Andretti, Unser, and many, many others. And there is one more, Hornish. On May 28, 2006, Sam Hornish Jr. won the 90th running of the Indianapolis 500. Make that brother Sam Hornish Jr. Born July 2, 1979, Sam is a member of Omega Lodge number 564 in Defiance, Ohio. He is also a member of Zenobia Shrine in Toledo, following in the footsteps of his father. Sam has been an active and dedicated Mason, speaking regularly at Masonic events in his hometown and across the country. In addition, he has participated with the Shrine in making public service announcements, lending his speaking talent and big name to help support the Shrine Hospitals. His racing career began in 1991 at age 12 and moved progressively from go-karts through Formula 2000 and on into the Indy Racing League in 1999. Along the way, he won multiple championships at all levels, including three IRL titles in 2001, 2002, and 2006. Today, he drives for Richard Petty Motorsports in the NASCAR series. With two IRL championships under his belt, he attracted the attention of racing team giant Roger Penske and moved to Penske's team Marlboro in 2005, and in some circles was known as the best active driver never to win the Indy 500. In 2006, he did away with that dubious title. Starting first, Hornish stayed in the hunt for the entire race, running in second place for the final few laps. Then, on the last lap, at the last possible second, he made a Hollywood script-style pass to win the race. Lost in this breathtaking ending and the fact that he had just won the world's greatest race was something else which reflects the demeanor and Masonic background Sam Hornish demonstrates on and off the track. In addition to winning the race, he won the Scott Brayton Sportsmanship Award. It was the first time any sportsmanship award had gone to the winner of the race. Brother Hornish is known on the racing circuit as a spiritual man with deep conviction and as a fair and clean competitor. At the end of the race, when he had the opportunity to make a pass for the lead that might have been dangerous, he elected to wait for a better opportunity. Asked about this in his post-race press conference, Brother Hornish said, "All the wins in the world don't mean anything if you can't be glad about it at the end of the day. I don't ever want to win a race like that, feeling like I cheated somebody out of the opportunity to win." At 35, he has time left to go on to more achievements in racing, as well as in other aspects of his life, including Freemasonry. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, what a fantastic segment with Brother Stephen L. Harrison. Always look forward to those. Again, if you want to ever check these out on YouTube, there's some really cool slides and things that these go through, and Brother Stephen L. Harrison puts those together for us, and we upload them on our YouTube channel. So if you want to go ahead and subscribe to either Illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison on YouTube, or you can subscribe to WCY Podcast Channel, you'll get those emailed to you as soon as they come out. And we host them the same way. So at 9:30 when the show comes out, those videos come out too every other week. Now we're on to this week's famous Freemason. You know, we've never covered Brother Oscar Wilde, who passed away in 1900, but before we talk about him, I first wanted to read a little bit from the Midnight Freemasons, and this was posted quite a while ago before it was an amalgamation of contributors. You know, we had just Illustrious Brother Todd E. Creason, who was the sole proprietor of the Midnight Freemasons. Back then, of course, you can guess it was called just the Midnight Freemason. And he had this to say, and it was a quote by Oscar Wilde. "To live is the rarest thing in the world. Most people exist. That is all." Oscar Wilde. University Lodge, number 357, Oxford, England. "We are the designers of our own lives. We make all the decisions, good and bad. It is easy to look at your life as something that happens to you instead of something you're in charge of. The truth is, it's up to us whether we participate in life or sit back and watch it pass by. Perhaps you're thinking of yourself right now. Yeah, someday when I'm not so busy and I have more time, I'd really like to spend more time enjoying life. But nobody knows how much time they have on Earth. It could all be over in another 80 years or before the sun goes down today. There are too many unknowns in life to assume you can do things tomorrow or 10 years from now or when you retire, maybe. If you really want to get into the game, shouldn't you just do that today? If not now, when?" So that was a piece from the Midnight Freemasons. Again, words by Brother Todd E. Creason. And brother Oscar Wilde. Oscar Wilde, born October 16th, 1854, and he passed away just a few days after my birthday, November 30th, 1900. I wasn't born in 1900. Born in Dublin, Ireland, Wilde was educated at Trinity College in Dublin and Oxford, where he achieved a rare double first. Wilde was known for his flamboyance and wit, but rejected by many for his unorthodox views and bohemian lifestyle. He wrote stories, essays, plays, poems, and one novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray, a timeless classic. Either that wallpaper goes or I do, Oscar Wilde's attributed last words as he lay dying in a drab Paris bedroom. He was raised in Oxford, May 25th, 1875, and he was actually excluded for non-payment of dues in January 22nd, 1883, and he also was a member of Apollo University Lodge, number 357. That's it for this week, guys. Please find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at WhenceCameU, check us out on Google Plus at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. You can email me there or at admin@wcypodcast.com. Please don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons, pushing out 3 articles every single week, brand new stuff, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, always some fresh Masonic content for you anytime you want it. Again, the Masonic Roundtable coming up every Tuesday at 10, 9 Central. This upcoming week, we are going to be talking operative lodges. So you're not going to want to miss that, of course. And please check out Brother Stephen L. Harrison's book, Tales from the Craft, and the pre-order Freemasons at Oak Island. I can't wait to read it. You can pre-order it right there in the show notes. It's a Kindle book, and it's only 99 cents. The price is right. So that's it, guys. Stay on the level. And for Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.